Whatever happened to the Human Genome Project? Unraveling the mysteries of our DNA promised to usher in a new era of medicine with treatments customized to match the genes of individual patients. In many ways, that era has arrived, but its benefits have not been shared widely, and the revolution has not been what we were promised. Author James Tabor shares this story in the new book, Tyranny of the Gene: Personalized Medicine and Its Threat to Public Health. James is a professor at the University of Utah and a member of the Center for Health Ethics, Arts, and Humanities. He joins us now to share five of his big ideas.
I'm Jim Tabry, a professor of philosophy at the University of Utah and the author of Tyranny of the Gene: Personalized Medicine and Its Threat to Public Health. Personalized medicine is hailed as a revolutionary new approach to healthcare. In contrast to the traditional model of medicine, where we're all treated as identical humans, the idea behind personalized medicine is that we're all unique in terms of our biology, our environment, and our lifestyle, and so in need of care tailored to us as individuals. The old model of one-size-fits-all healthcare, the argument goes, is being fundamentally replaced by personalized medicine's ability to deliver the right treatment to the right patient at the right time. I first encountered personalized medicine in 2011 when my father was diagnosed with lung cancer. That disease is particularly dangerous because it typically isn't found until it is metastasized, and that was the case with my dad. By the time he was diagnosed, the cancer was all through his body. Tumors had been growing on his spinal cord, and we only realized he was so sick when the cancer paralyzed him. But then our family received some promising news. A biopsy revealed that there was a molecular marker on the surface of the cancer cells, making him an ideal candidate for a drug called erlotinib that could disrupt the cell's growth and halt the deadly disease's progression. Erlotinib is considered one of personalized medicine's great success stories, but the vision is for this approach to healthcare to spread out through all facets of medicine. Patients with cardiovascular disease, diabetes, vision loss, obesity, and dementia, to name just a few afflictions, stand to benefit from a new era of personalized medicine breakthroughs. Champions of personalized medicine say the paradigm shift will bring down the costs of healthcare by swapping out clumsy and expensive trial and error odysseys with treatments that are tailor-made for patients from the beginning. And personalized medicine research focused on diversity will ensure that the miracle cures and biomedical game changers are available to everyone, regardless of race or socioeconomic status. Given all that, it shouldn't be surprising that there's so much excitement surrounding this personalized medicine revolution. In Tyranny of the Gene, I'll tell you a very different story. It's a book about where this idea for personalized medicine came from, who's been promoting it and why, who stands to benefit and who doesn't, and how it's distracting from more effective approaches to improving health. It's a book about President Franklin Delano Roosevelt, an environmental pioneer Rachel Carson, about an indigenous community in Arizona promised one thing to participate in medical research, only to get something else entirely. About how we got from a human genome project that cost $3 billion to sequence one genome in 2000 to a world today where anybody can have their genome sequenced for a couple hundred dollars. And about patients whose lives were medically and financially upended by personalized medicine. For this book bite, though, I thought I'd organize the insights around one story, the story of my dad. That's because, as I said earlier, lung cancer and treatments of it are often held up as personalized medicine's great success story. So taking a closer look at what success actually looks like will give you a sense of why I think we should all be skeptical about the hype surrounding this purported revolution. Insight number one, personalized medicine is just marketing lingo for genomic medicine. Personalized medicine is typically characterized as if it takes a comprehensive view of people and what makes them sick or healthy. Their biological makeup, the environments to which they've been exposed, their lifestyle choices. In fact, personalized medicine is almost entirely about one thing, genes. The erlotinib wasn't a good match for my dad because of the air that he breathed, or the food that he ate, or the fly fishing that he did each spring. Erlotinib was a good match for my dad because of the molecular genetic profile of the cancer cells in his body. And this is something that we see everywhere that personalized medicine is deployed. Go open a personalized medicine journal or check out a book about personalized medicine from your local library. Pop your head in on a personalized medicine conference or look for a video about personalized medicine on YouTube. What you'll see are people talking about DNA. The right treatment for the right patient at the right time has always been about using the DNA in our bodies to determine what's right. As you'll read in the book, in fact, the very term personalized medicine was developed by pharmaceutical executives as a marketing slogan in the 1990s, designed to sell investors and the public on the power of infusing genetics into the drug industry. We are now all living in a world where that pharmaceutical marketing slogan has become the catchphrase for a revolution that tends to hide the reductionistic genetic bias at its core. Second insight: personalized medicines are extremely expensive. Personalized medicine advocates hail its potential to drive down the costs of healthcare. It sounds good in theory, but there's a problem with it in reality. The problem is that personalized medicines are among the priciest pharmaceutical treatments in existence. There's a very natural biological explanation for this. Personalized medicine works by carving up patient populations into smaller and smaller subgroups based on their molecular genetic profiles. This leads to what economists call market segmentation: fewer consumers for any given personalized medicine product. The primary goal of the private companies that develop those therapies is to turn a profit. So they drastically increase the prices of the products that they manufacture in order to offset the limited pool of users. We saw this firsthand with my dad. The bills for his surgeries, biopsies, hospital stays, physical therapy, and radiation were staggering. The real shocker, though, was the erlotinib. A one-month supply of those tiny pills was priced at over $5,000. A number of other personalized medicines for lung cancer have been approved since my father was diagnosed, and these run in the $10,000 to $20,000 per month range. List prices of $50,000 per month aren't uncommon at all for personalized medicines, and some one-time use drugs are even billed at over $3 million. Oncologists have long warned their patients about the potentially toxic side effects of treatments designed to combat cancer: a compromised immune system, hair loss, nausea, anemia. The arrival of personalized medicines has led to a new side effect about which physicians now caution their patients: financial toxicity. Patients can find themselves forced to decide between foregoing treatment or selling their home, losing their life savings, going bankrupt. Insight number three: health disparities are caused by our environments, not our genes. Our society is plagued by unjust health inequities. Communities of color die younger, have higher rates of infant mortality and maternal mortality, and carry a heavier disease burden for all sorts of chronic illnesses like high blood pressure, diabetes, and heart disease. Proponents of personalized medicine are now actively recruiting in those communities of color, promising people that participation in the genetic research can combat the health disparities that are ravaging them and their loved ones. The problem with this reasoning, though well-intentioned, is that decades of scientific research have made it clear that health disparities are caused by things in our physical and social environments, not in our genes. Communities of color are exposed more often to discrimination in the workplace, to environmental toxins, and to housing insecurity. And they less often have access to walkable neighborhoods, clean air, and reliable health care. Take lung cancer. The best chance of surviving lung cancer diagnosis has always been catching it early and surgically removing it before it spreads. But physicians have known for decades that Black patients receive these life-saving surgeries less often than white patients, with deadly consequences. Now jump to the present and the era of personalized medicine. Studies have shown that Black patients are less likely to get tested to see if they're a good match for a drug like erlotinib. Black people aren't dying of lung cancer at higher rates than white people because they have a particular gene that makes them susceptible to lung cancer. They're dying at higher rates of lung cancer because they live in a world that places Black people in environments where the air is less safe to breathe, and then treats Black people with lung cancer differently than white people with lung cancer. The fourth insight: genuine personalized medicine cures are few and far between. In the summer of 2012, about a year after my father was first diagnosed with lung cancer, he went in for a routine screening. I can still hear the tears in my mother's voice as she was conveying the news. The scans revealed that his cancer was growing again. Erlotinib and drugs like it don't eradicate cancer. What they do is temporarily halt its growth and spread. Eventually, though, the cancerous cells evolve and develop a resistance to the treatments. And when they do that, they jump back to life. My dad never regained the ability to walk. His health deteriorated quickly, and he died shortly thereafter. Personalized medicine advocates foresee a future where medical magic bullets and biomedical breakthroughs are the norm across healthcare. But even in its flagship domain of cancer care, genuine cures are actually quite rare. Most often, when they do work, They're just extending life for very sick people by a few months. There's no way to say how much time erlotinib added to the end of my dad's life, but there's every reason to believe that it allowed him to live longer. I'll always cherish that time with him, and I'm grateful for it. But I also remind myself that erlotinib didn't save him. For a very high price, it held a terminal illness at bay for a short period of time, and even that benefit isn't available to everyone equally. Fifth and final insight. Our focus should be on making our environment safe for everyone. There's still no cure for lung cancer, despite the millions of patients diagnosed with it every year, and the billions of dollars invested in developing new expensive treatments. The good news, though, is that rates of lung cancer have steadily declined for decades now. But that's not because of some pharmaceutical miracle pill. It's due to ingenious public health research and effective public health interventions designed to make our world more lung-friendly. Radon remission systems, asbestos abatement programs, anti-smoking campaigns. Lung cancer isn't unique in this regard. For just about any disease that you can imagine, taking steps ahead of time to prevent the development of that illness is both more cost-efficient and more medically effective than trying to cure it once it's arisen. It's easy to take for granted how important it is to have access to a nutritious diet, how dangerous it is to come into sustained contact with pesticides, how hazardous it is to expose children to lead, and how essential it is to lay a baby to sleep on her back. But those realizations were all once points of contention, which were settled by public health research that attended to the impact of the environment on our health. Proponents of personalized medicine hail its departure from one-size-fits-all healthcare. That's its big selling point. But most harmful things in our environments, automobile exhaust, factory smog, housing insecurity, infectious diseases, highly processed foods, to name just a few, really are bad for everyone. That's why the health and economic impact of addressing them is so great. Everyone benefits. Not just the folks with the right genes, or the right skin color, or the right bank account balance. Healthcare is in the midst of a massive swerve towards genetics, packaged under the attractive label of personalized medicine. In Tyranny of the Gene, I'll uncover for you the political, financial, and technological forces behind this purported revolution, and I'll reveal why it's a revolution about which we should all be wary. Thanks for listening to this next Big Idea Club book bite about Tyranny of the Gene. I hope the book changes the way you think about your own health, the health of others, and what we should be doing as a society to improve health for all of us.
Thank you, James. That was James Tabery with five big ideas from Tyranny of the Gene, Personalized Medicine and Its Threat to Public Health. You might also like our book bite for The Genome Odyssey, Medical Mysteries and the Incredible Quest to Solve Them by Ewan Angus Ashley. I'm Michael Kovnat. Thanks for listening.